Last week, whenever, or I guess Sunday, whenever we were discussing this, we really got down a little farther in the passage. I wanted to take just a step back and let's talk about the subject matter that is in chapter 13 and how we are approaching chapter 13 from an understanding standpoint. And I want to preface it by saying that this is a hard chapter for me. I'll just speak for myself, because I look at this and I see it very clearly one way, and then I read it a different way, and it can confuse you if you don't really stay, I think, with the subject that's being discussed here. What is the subject that is under discussion here in this passage? Let's just take a really high level question about what this is. Okay, at a high level, it's talking about being prepared. Okay, Jesus uses an object lesson, a question actually from his disciples, to give that lesson. What's the question?
About the temple.
Specifically about the temple, they said, look how beautiful this place is. And he seizes on the opportunity to make an object lesson out of the temple. What did he say was going to happen? Okay. Well, let me be more specific. In verse 2, what does he say is going to happen in this description that he's given? Say again. It's going to be destroyed. In verse 2, he says, do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left upon another, which will not be torn down. Now, you can take that figuratively, or you can take it literally. And I'm going to argue tonight as we go through this that it's literal. This is a little too specific even for imagery, not to say that it can't be applied. So in our study then, we went through several things, several signs that were going to accompany, because the apostles or the disciples wanted to know, rightly so, how are we going to know this is happening? Matthew gives a little bit additional information. They had several questions that they asked. When are these things going to happen? When's going to be the sign of your return? When's going to be the end of the age? Mark had a little bit different question. They just wanted to know when these things were going to happen. So he said, I'm going to give you some signs. So some of the signs that we talked about, and I will be frank with you, you can apply this to a lot of different things, can't you? Let's look at a few of them. The first one we talked about, and I feel like I'm yelling, so I am going to move this down just a little bit. The first one was signs or claims of false messiahs, and we talked about that. Something that happened before Jesus, something Jesus said was going to happen after. The next thing we talked about was political and military unrest, because this was a nation that never had political or military unrest. And I say that sarcastically, because you can apply this to a lot of different periods of time in history, can't you? Can be applied. Natural catastrophes. Had this nation ever seen natural catastrophes before? Have they seen them since? Yes. Persecution and preaching. Okay, look with me if you will, because now we're getting, I think, to some things that can nail down these events a little bit closer. Let's read 9 through 13 and pay a special attention to verse 10. But be on your guard, for they will deliver you to the courts, and you will be flogged in the synagogues, and you will stand before governors and kings for my sake and as a testimony to them. And the gospel must first be preached to all nations. And when they arrest you and deliver you up, do not be anxious beforehand about what you are to say, but say whatever is given you in that hour. For it is not you who speak, but it is the Holy Spirit. And brother will deliver brother to death, and father his child, and children will rise up against parents and have them put to death. And you will be hated by all on account of my name, but the one who endures to the end shall be saved. I think one, I'm going to call them a milepost. One of the more specific mileposts that we see, I believe, is verse 10. The gospel must be preached to all nations. So can you tell me, well, we'll hold on that. Let's go to the second milepost, because I believe there's another milepost. And it was mentioned Sunday morning, but I want us to mention it again. Because with these things, each of these things narrow down, I believe, what the event is that we're talking about. And that last one is the abomination of desolation, verse 14. But when you see the abomination of desolation standing where it should not be, let the reader understand, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. And he goes through a little bit more description on this. Does anybody know where we find this phrase or where this phrase is being quoted from? Daniel. Actually, three passages in Daniel where this abomination of desolation is described. Somebody get Daniel, the 9th chapter, verse 27. And then someone 11, verse 31. And then someone 12, verse 11. So 9:27, who has that? Don't everybody raise your hand at once. 9:27. Okay, 11 verse 31. Anyone?
And forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary of forces. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place their abomination of desolation.
Thank you. 12 verse 11. So there's two events in history that whenever you study this, I think could be described by these passages. The first one, I think, is immediately written off because of when it occurred, and that was about 170 years before Jesus was born. Antiochus Epiphanes invaded Jerusalem and captured the city. He marched into the Jewish temple, erected a statue of the Greek god Zeus, sacrificed a pig on the altar of incense. I don't think that's what we're talking about here, obviously, because Jesus is talking about this and the happening in the future in around 33 A.D. But, I want to make sure everybody heard that. There's not always a single fulfillment in prophecy. Sometimes there are dual fulfillments. Because later on when we start talking about this in verse 24, I think we're going to see some of the very same type of things that Josh is talking about. Things that could have multiple meanings or things that could be used to symbolize what is happening here. So I think that is extremely important. But I think when Jesus uses this here, it's safe to say in this passage, he is taking them to a place where they would understand Daniel. They would understand the things that are happening. And more than likely, I believe he's talking about Titus when he invaded Jerusalem in 70 AD. And the reason why I say this is several fold, and we're going to get down to it in a little bit. Because, number one, the events that are going to occur are also paired with some of the reactions by people there. But number two, the events that are going to occur are going to have a direct effect on something that is broader. And we're going to read down a little bit farther. In verses 14 through 18 are described some very specific things that are going to happen. the people are going to react in a certain way, or it is a recommendation that they are going to happen in a certain way. Those who are in Judea are going to flee to the mountains, verse 14. If you're on the housetop, don't go down and get anything out of the house. If you're in the field, don't turn back to get your cloak. If you're with child, it's not going to be good. If it's in the winter, it's not going to be good. What this is telling the people is there are going to be some very quickly occurring things that are going to be very bad for the people. And he's giving them warning ahead of time. Josephus said that the Jewish historian who gives the clearest firsthand account of Jerusalem's fall reports that Jewish Christians in Judea actually heeded Jesus' warning in this. When the city and the temple fell, more than 1 million Jews died, but Jewish Christians, by and large, were not among them, for they had already fled the city when they saw the Romans coming. Some of the evidence just from history, I think, points to this just because of that fact. People were saved because of it, because they remembered the things that Jesus had said. But that's not the only reason why. Look at verse 23. But take heed, behold, I have told you everything in advance. Jesus has given this information beforehand for a purpose. If the event that we're talking about here in chapter 13 had occurred too many years in the future, would this statement have even been necessary? And I would argue that it wouldn't be, at least not to this audience. But Jesus said, I have told you in advance, take heed. Very specific. So to me, that points me to an event that is going to quickly occur. And it's an event that is going to be such that the people would need to take heed on it and listen to what Jesus is saying. Let's consider, as we had the comment before, let's talk 24, because we've got down to 23. We're really talking about the event. And I think the event points to this invasion in AD 70. But whenever you begin to get in verse 24, then to me, that's where, for Michael, it begins to get a little bit confusing, unless we have the benefit of understanding that there can be multiple meanings in some of these. So if you look in the passage there in 24, beginning down through verse 27, Jesus begins to describe what is going to happen in those days. But in those days, what days? After the tribulation. And then he begins to quote from Scripture. And he quotes several scriptures. The first one, let's look at Isaiah 13:10. And we're just going to read a few of these passages, or a few of these passages from the Old Testament. 32:10, within a year and a few days you will be troubled, O complacent daughters, for the vintage is ending. I must have had the wrong one. 13:10. I need to get a better pair of glasses. I apologize. 13:10. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not flash forth their light. The sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon will not shed its light. What is the context of Isaiah, the 53rd chapter? Or excuse me, the 13th chapter? What is the context of this passage that Isaiah is talking about? Okay, the judgment of the children of Israel, Judah, and as it pertains to Babylon, right? So he's going back to something that happened in the past to give them an indication of what is going to happen in the future. Turn to Joel 2, verse 10. Somebody read that if you get there, please. And then read also 28 through 32.
And it shall come to pass afterward that I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. Even on the male and female servants in those days I will pour out my spirit.
32.
And I will show wonders in the heavens and on earth, blood and fire and columns of smoke. The sun shall be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes. And it shall come to pass that everyone who calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem there shall be those who escape, as the Lord has said, and among the survivors shall be those who the Lord calls.
What event is Joel talking about here in this passage? I know it's quoted in the New Testament in Acts 2, but what event is Joel talking about? Is it also not the judgment of Judah? So Jesus is hearkening back to passages that would describe an event that he is trying to get them to look at the way Isaiah and Joel would have tried to get the people at that time to look at the day of the Lord. Judgment. Judgment is coming upon you. Whatever this event is, this is the imagery that Jesus is trying to get them to understand. I would argue that these things are those that would conjure up in them the understanding that judgment is coming. The day of the Lord. Let's turn to Isaiah the 34th chapter. Read verse 4. Isaiah 34. Verse 4 says, "And all the host of heaven will wear away, and the sky will be rolled up like a scroll, and all their host will also wither away, as a leaf withers from the vine, or as one withers from the fig tree." Keep that in mind for a moment. And let's also read Daniel, the 7th chapter. Excuse me. Somebody read Daniel, the 7th chapter, verse 13. Go ahead and read it when you get it. So, what is this event describing? In Daniel. I've told you there's no trick questions, I promise. This may be a little bit more of a difficult question, but what event is this describing in Daniel? Son of man is given dominion. So sometimes I think we look at this and look at the final coming. I would argue I don't think that's what's being talked about here. It's being talked about as given dominion, the kingdom being come. Not necessarily the second coming. So whenever we look at these things in this passage, I think he's getting to the presentation of the Son of Man. The Son of Man being triumphant, going before the Ancient of Days. The last one I want to look at is in Deuteronomy 30 and verse 4. "If your outcasts are at the ends of the earth, from there the Lord your God will gather you, and from there he will bring you back." The context of Deuteronomy 30 is talking about the restoration of the children of Israel. So, putting all these passages together, I think what Jesus is trying to get them to understand is the day of the Lord, the day of judgment, the day of judging for this nation, for these people, are coming. In that time, the Son of Man is going to be elevated and is going to have dominion. And during that time, there will be a restoration or a remnant that is saved. Don't worry about what you may hear about people being destroyed, about all of the promises in the old law not being fulfilled, because what are these people fixing to experience in just a few years? What significance was the destruction of the temple to the children of Israel? Say again. Their identity. Their all of their historical records. Say again. Losing the special relationship with God. Do you think that as a Jewish Christian in the first century, that you would have a problem getting over that piece. I mean, we've got to give them a little bit of credit here. I think that the Jewish Christians had a tough time separating. I mean, you look in Acts, whenever we started looking at Galatians and Acts and how the children of Israel had such a hard time letting go of some of the Jewish laws. Imagine now losing the identity, the relationship with God that's going to happen whenever this occurs. I believe what Jesus is saying here is, don't panic. There's a judgment day coming for this race, this generation. And that is why he says, if you look in verse, let me get back to Mark. That's why he says there in verse 30 of Mark 13, truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. He is describing this event, I believe, up until at least this point of immediacy in action. This is what's going to happen. I don't believe that he's talking about in this event the second coming as much as he is the coming of the dominion of me. I'm going to be here. Very well said. And I think to add to that, he uses the Old Testament passages that would bring those thoughts and images back from when it happened before. Is this the first time that God is judging the children of Israel? No. That's why he quotes from Isaiah. That's why he quotes from Joel. That's why he quotes from Daniel. This isn't the first time God has judged his people. He said, I'm going to judge them again. And I'm going to judge them again, but this time the difference is whenever I judge them, I'm coming to be king. I'm going to have dominion. And this generation isn't going to pass away until all of these things come about. And that's why I think whenever you look at least through verse 30, Jesus is really talking about this thing that's going to happen very soon and this thing that is meaningful to them because they see it as a judgment of the unrighteousness, at least his disciples, by his teaching, a judgment of the unrighteousness of the children of Israel at that time. It's going to happen again. And this time I'm going to be king. And I'm going to take it from here. And I'm going to have dominion. Don't worry about it. But when you see these things happening, please take heed. Get yourself away from it. Because And I'm going to tell you, for me, I put this here, and this is Michael putting it here. This event of the Passover, what would have happened to the Jews had they been caught up at the time of the Passover as the Egyptians and had not obeyed and had not heeded the warning of God? What would have happened to their firstborn? Is it an accident that this is happening during Passover? I don't think so. He's given them the same heed my warning that he gave the children of Israel. Heed my warning. Questions or comments? I know we kind of blew through that, but I wanted to bring those Old Testament passages up to, at least from my perspective, this is how I approach this passage, and I'm full well open that I could have missed something. Crickets. All right. Well, if something does come up, please bring it to my attention because I want to have a better understanding of this. But then if you look in verse 30, and we read verse 30. Verse 31, Jesus, we've already got through. Verse 31, Jesus says, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away." I think just a general statement by him for them to understand he is the one, again, in control. But then in verse 32, and again, I'm putting my opinion in here, just based on what I read, please give me input back. I think he switches gears. I think he changes. And the reason that I say that is because he uses a very interesting little word, but. To me, that's just a transition from what he's been talking about to something he's going to be talking about that's a little different. He says, but of that day or hour, what day or hour is he talking about? I think we have to go back to the question. And unfortunately, Mark doesn't list the question. Matthew does. And if you go back and look at Matthew, I think Matthew gives you an indication that the day and the hour they're talking about, I believe, he's transitioned to saying, when are you going to be coming back again? When is the end of this age? When is that time coming? He says, but of that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone. Take heed, keep on the alert, for you do not know when the appropriate time is, or excuse me, appointed time is. It is like a man away on a journey who, upon leaving his house and putting his slaves in charge, assigning to each one his task, also commanded the doorkeeper to stay on the alert. Therefore, be on the alert, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming, whether in the evening, at midnight, at cockcrowing, or in the morning, lest he come suddenly and find you asleep. And what I say to you, I say to all, be on the alert. What's the time frame in verse 32 that's different than the time frame that we talked about in the previous passage? We don't know. That's why I think we've got to be talking about something way in the future. He says, I don't know when it is. This other time, I know when it is. It's going to be coming soon. This generation isn't going to pass away. This time, he's saying, I don't know. I don't know when it is. Kenny, you're shaking your head. What you got? Spit it out.
I don't know either. I don't know either. But one of the things that I do think, I think you're right, Josh is right on this. A lot of these things are dual interpreted. In my opinion, Daniel is the key to all of this. Mm-hmm. It is, he keeps on calling himself the Son of Man. And that is Daniel's purpose. He's taking that from Daniel. He's taking a lot of this imagery from Daniel. So I really do think that Daniel is the key to all of this. And I don't understand that part of Daniel.
I mean, neither. Yeah, and that's absolutely true, and it's a very good point. The reason why I take it a little bit is Jesus in Matthew is asked to answer certain questions. To me, he has answered the other questions, and if you take it in context and go back to where Matthew is and you compare the text, this would also be the answer to that other question.
Well, to Kenny's point,
mm-hmm.
if you look at Daniel 9 and this prophecy of the 70 weeks, Old Testament really looks forward to the coming of the kingdom, the destruction of the Jewish nation, this world empire, and perhaps some passages, Daniel 2, about the destruction of that world empire. But it's all kind of sandwiched in there together, and we just know all this is going to happen in the future. That may even be the question that's asked back in verse 4, mm-hmm. when will all these things be? All what thing? Everything that the Old Testament is talking about, when's that coming to pass? And for a Jewish mindset, you're telling me that Jerusalem's going to be destroyed, the temple's going to be destroyed? That's mm-hmm. it for them.
Yeah.
What more could happen? So it's no surprise that Jesus kind of tags in these matters about perhaps the future judgment along with these matters of this judgment.
Well, the fact is we've seen it that way with the dual meaning between the passages in Daniel and Jesus using them to apply to both. So we do see that. So I certainly don't take that out as the possibility. I guess I go back to Matthew and continue to say Jesus is completing the answers to the questions. But again, I could not argue that this could not also be applied to the same thing. I would just simply say that whenever you go back and read Matthew, if you look in Matthew 24, verse 3, what they asked him was, tell us when all these things will be, and what will be the sign of your coming, and of the end of the age. He's addressed all of these things be. He's addressed the sign of your coming. And he hasn't addressed, this passage would be indicating the end of the age. That's the reason why I personally lean to that being what this is. Now, I can't line those up perfectly, and I would not be dogmatic about it. I think it could apply to both, but I think it's very interesting that this seems to be pointing to a time where not even the Son is aware of it. Not even the Son. This is the one thing that the Father has, as far as I know, the Father has withheld from the Son. He has reserved him. He has given him. And Jesus pretty much even knows when he's going to be established. He pretty much knows when he's going to be put to death and when he's going to be given dominion over that kingdom, doesn't he? It's at his death. What does Jesus not know? Whenever God is going to come back and receive the kingdom back from him. And so to me, whenever I look at this, that's the reason why I put it where it is. Certainly wouldn't be, I think, an incorrect to have a dual meaning on it, but I am open for some of you smarter people to tell me where I'm wrong, please. I mean, any thoughts or comments about it? Yes, sir.
I take it back to verse 31.
Okay. Good point. And that would be, I think that would fit well at least with the interpretation of that being the end of the times. When is this time going to occur? Because Jesus himself doesn't. But regardless of which one of these you take, what are the lessons that we take out of this? Look at the things. What does he say? And it's so fittingly at the very beginning. What is Jesus' theme here? Regardless of whether it's Jerusalem, regardless of whether it is him coming in dominion, or regardless of whether it's the end of the age, what is the lesson? Be prepared. Be ready. Isn't it? Were the Jews ready for AD 70? Were the Jews ready for him to have dominion? Are we ready for him to come again? I think that is the lesson. And to me, I mean, we can have some time for comments, but to me, whenever you look at 13, I think it's critical to understand some of the thought processes behind them, because it is so often misused that every time you see the Son of Man coming in glory, it must mean this. And every time you see the abomination of desolation, it must mean this. We've got to get that out of our thought processes and understand, to the point made before, that these things can have dual meanings. And Jesus uses them for powerful imagery for these people to understand judgment is coming. Judgment came for the Jews, and judgment is coming for you and I. Thoughts or comments before we leave chapter 13, and I can breathe a sigh of relief. Yes, sir. Thank you for bringing that back to me, because I don't think it's an accident that Daniel mentions the fig tree and Jesus uses the imagery of the fig tree. Thank you for that, Aaron. I blew past it with my other notes. But go back and read that. Go back and read that passage in Daniel. I think it's so beautiful the way Jesus uses this. He's a master at this. Basically, thinking himself not by the military conquest, but by promoting character. Good point. Good point. Other thoughts about 13, because I'm not really interested in diving off into 14 before Sunday.
As a big picture part of being prepared, don't let this event or any event destroy your faith and separate you from God.
Very good point. The Jewish Christians could have easily let the destruction of the temple do that, couldn't they? God's left us. No, he said, I haven't left you. Very good point.
Yes. You were going to mention verse 10 as a landmark. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And when was the gospel preached to all the nations? Was it before or after AD 70? So, what's that?
Both.
I guess it depends on what your take on all the world is. You know, at that particular time, it was the world that they knew. Very good points. And thank you for that reminder. It is a milepost. That's what I call them. It's something that I can look at and say, this will peg me here or not. So very good points. Anything else? All right. So whenever we begin on Sunday, and for those of you who want, take a read at Luke 12, 35 through 38. In relation to this, I'll just leave that for you to write down and peruse on your own as it pertains to this last passage here. Sunday, we're going to get into Mark the 14th chapter. Mark the 14th chapter really describes the Passover feast and some events surrounding that Passover feast and the story of his anointing for burial. And I would ask that you read all of the passages pertaining to this and all of the Gospels, and maybe even jot down what those passages are, because I think we can get some very good lessons out of this anointing that occurs with Jesus. So if there are no other questions, thank you very much for the class. We'll wait on the bell.